From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse Bureau. Thank you very much for tuning in today to our conversations with candidates from the 32nd Senate District running for the Democratic nomination. A little bit about that election. The Republican is running unopposed, and we'll talk to him later on in the election season. But on August 11th, voters will go to the polls and choose from among three candidates for the Democratic nomination. Those are Jane Swigum, Paul Weber, and Brad Paff, who is kind enough to join me right now. Mr. Paff, thank you much for joining us today.
It's good to join you. I hope you're doing well today.
Very well. Thank you for asking. One thing I want to make sure that we cover right off the bat is just a little bit about yourself for those voters who might not be familiar. So either personal or professional details that you think people should know, what makes you want to seek this office?
Well, thank you. I am a native son of the Coulee region of western Wisconsin. I was born in the city of La Crosse and raised on a family dairy farm in northern La Crosse County. It was on that northern La Crosse dairy farm that I learned the western Wisconsin values of hard work, resilience, appreciation for the land, and respect for one's neighbors and their community. And, you know, I'm running for the state Senate because, quite frankly, I believe that these tough and uncertain times, we do need to have a leader in office, that one that is listens, understands, has empathy, and is willing to fight for the ideas and values that all of us hold dear. And so I'm excited to be on this show today, and thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Certainly, and thank you for being here. So while we're on the subject of kind of introducing yourself to people, introduce us to a couple of your key ideas. If you're chosen by voters in this district to represent them in the Senate in Madison, what are your top priorities when you get there?
Well, I think probably the most important thing that we need to focus on right now is the fact that the uncertain times that we're facing. And we need to make sure that, you know, we're prepared and we come out of COVID-19 as strong as when we went into it. And we need to make sure that we keep our economy strong. We need to make sure that we keep the people of this area safe and healthy. And we need to make sure that we tackle this together. And we cannot allow this virus to divide us. We need to focus together as a community on what we can do in order to, beat this virus and to keep this community and this area strong and moving forward. So the most important issues for me are making sure that we invest in our families, our working men and women. We invest in our small businesses. We make sure that we have the resources in place to have our kids and our grandkids have a high quality public education. We need to make sure that we have a healthcare system, obviously, that one that is affordable and within reach and accessible for our residents. And of course, you know, we need to make sure that we keep our natural landscape as beautiful as we have it right now. These are unbelievable rolling hills, coulees, and valleys that we live in here. And it's what brings people to this area. And I want to make sure that this area and the region of this area is well represented in the state Senate. So I'm excited about the opportunity that we have out here, and look forward to continuing to listen to people and hear their thoughts and ideas on what we can do together.
You set this up with initially talking about a response to COVID-19, which brings to mind two aspects of response. One, healthcare, which is a major issue for a lot of families, especially those who might be unemployed or underemployed as a result of COVID-19, and the other being economic, as people are facing loss of jobs and companies are having a really hard time trying to keep paying people without having work for them to do. So let's take the healthcare aspect of it first. What do you want to do to improve people's access to healthcare here in western Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, I think that first of all, we need to recognize the fact that as you stated, that, COVID-19, we are facing a global health pandemic. And as a result of that global health pandemic, we are also seeing an economic slowdown that is impacting all of us. Way too many of us, are being impacted by what is happening here. So we need to make sure that we provide the resources, but we have to have that leadership as well. And right now, I just want to be clear. I do not see the kind of leadership coming out of our state legislature right now to tackle these problems. Our state legislature has not met since early spring. And since that time, an awful lot has happened. We need to make sure that we have the financial resources that are put in place to assist our public health departments, to make sure that we have the financial resources put in place to make sure that we keep our rural clinics and our rural hospitals accessible but yet affordable. We need to make sure that we provide health care opportunities for individuals that have lost their jobs because they have employer-based health care. No longer do they have that health care because they don't have the job. Why we need to be able to have these conversations and to move forward to provide assistance to the people in this area and to this state. And I want to be able to have those conversations and work with our small business community and work with our working men and women and to learn the situations that they have there and what we can do in order to put different tools in place. One of the first things that we can do is we need to make sure that we take those federal Medicaid dollars that the state of Wisconsin has walked away from. Our state has walked away from hundreds of millions of dollars of federal Medicaid dollars that are available. And we've done that because of ideological differences that the majority party in the legislature has in regards to the Affordable Care Act. And that's unfortunate. We cannot have partisan politics get in the way of providing much needed health dollars that we can then send back here to assist our residents.
So you're potentially one new legislator in Madison. If the balance of power doesn't shift in a pretty major way, how do you go about reaching across the aisle to create the common ground that's necessary to bring the other side of the aisle from you over to your way of thinking about the healthcare issue?
Well, I think the thing that we need to do is we need to make sure that everybody that's in the legislature recognizes who they work for. They work for the residents of this state. And I think the more that the legislature on both political parties can meet with people, listen to people, hear firsthand the stories that people have, better understand the day-to-day circumstances that's happening out here in the countryside, if they heard all of that, there would be a greater desire and impetus to get together and to resolve some of these issues that, quite frankly, need to be resolved. And they shouldn't be partisan. It should not be partisan in order to try and figure out how to help working families that have lost their health care as a result of an economic slowdown due to this global health pandemic. This should not be a partisan issue. This should be something in which we come together and figure out how we can, bridge the gap, find solutions here to make sure that we have both short and long-term solutions in place to assist our residents. I want to be able to do that. And I think the best thing to be able to do is to listen to the people of this state, listen to the voters of this area and this state that are asking for us to come together. And so, I pledge to, travel this district, listen to the people, work the telephones, hear firsthand the concerns that are happening. And that means, taking those thoughts and those ideas and, making sure that legislative colleagues, leaders within the legislature, hear the thoughts and ideas that are being shared by the residents of this region. And so they have a better understanding of what's happening out here in the countryside. That is so important to me. And, I am someone who's, always willing to, meet people on common ground. Legislators from both political parties meet people on common ground, hear their thoughts and ideas, but then ask in return that they listen and hear to what what's happening here in this region and what the people of this area are looking for.
Speaking of what the people in this area are looking for, you talked about your experience on the dairy farm, and even before this COVID-19 business, the dairy industry was facing some tough times here in Wisconsin. Other industries have seen, you know, manufacturing jobs have become an issue over the years as less and less manufacturing is done in this country, and the economy across the board is difficult for a lot of people, especially working class people. What has to be done to protect working class jobs in Wisconsin, and particularly in those industries that people have kind of known us for?
Well, thank you for asking about that. I, without a doubt, you know, we have lost way too many small manufacturers and family farmers in this state. And I think the first thing that needs to happen is this, is that as a legislator, we need to listen and we need to learn and we need to recognize and we need to understand what is happening. And we have to not talk over the top, but yet we need to be able to travel and listen and learn to actually what's happening on the ground. We have an amazing and creative entrepreneurs out here and we have a history in Wisconsin of engineering and of manufacturing and of processing. And so I strongly believe that there are tremendous opportunities available in Wisconsin for agriculture as well as for manufacturing, light manufacturing as well as heavy manufacturing. I think there's value-added opportunities throughout the supply chain. I think we need to work with our four-year universities as well as our technical college systems on the research and development. I think we need to make sure that we have public-private partnerships that are put in place with our education system and our research labs, as well as with our small manufacturers and even with our farmers, to make sure that we can create the value-added goods and services that the consumers in this area, in this state, this region, and this country want. I think we've got tremendous opportunities to be able to do this. Unfortunately, I don't think that we've had as aggressive or as a broad discussion that we need to have on this topic. I think that we've thrown our hands up in the air and said, oh, there's nothing that can be done. I strongly disagree with that. I think there's tremendous opportunities out here to have a rural renaissance. I think that we can create a number of different value-added agriculture products, food products, manufacturing opportunities are there. The consumer demands are constantly changing, and we can meet that if we had, you know, someone who was willing to work on a bipartisan basis, to work with our farmers and our manufacturers and our researchers and our education institutions in order to put those, and our workforce, to put those kind of incentives in place. And I'm that kind of individual, and I want to be able to do that.
A common refrain among people on the conservative side of the spectrum is that government needs to get out of the way, that potential innovators in our private sector need to face less regulation from government and less involvement on the state and federal level so that they have room to be creative and potentially more successful, they would say. What do you see as the role of government in the creation and innovation of businesses so that we can bring manufacturing and farming jobs back to Wisconsin on a level that people can actually make a living at?
I think the number one thing to do is be a facilitator, is to recognize the fact you don't have all the answers, but be able to put the different voices and individuals around the same table and start having the conversation. And those are conversations about what research and development opportunities that may be taking place at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse or at Western Technical College or some of our other private labs. It could be what's happening with our workforce and our workforce training programs, how we can better coordinate those, how we can make sure that we've got financial investment that's coming from the private sector to make sure that that's available. I think that all of these different tools can happen. And I think that, you know, I've got the background that demonstrates that I can put people together in the same room. We can talk about how we want to reach common goals, and that is to be able to reinvest in our communities and reinvest in our economy. And I think that we need to, you know, leave our pride and our, you know, we need to leave our pride at the door there and just come forward and figure out what best that we can do. And if there's specific regulations that may be hampering or slowing things down, I think we need to acknowledge that and we need to be able to bring that forward. But I don't think that we need to start by just saying, you know, this is, nothing's ever going to work and it never can be done. I don't believe in that. I believe there is tremendous opportunities, but we need to have that kind of leadership. Just recently, I had a conversation with a number of individuals. Some are small business owners, others that were retired within the workforce that are very interested in talking about what we can do to create new jobs and a new economy that use less and less energy. You know, what can we do? What kind of engineering is available? What kind of investment packages may be available? I'm interested in that. I'm interested in learning more about what we can do. And I, as a state senator, see my job as bringing all the different pieces together to have the conversation and to work with our workforce, our education, our researchers, our investors, our business community, our farming community to do this. There is tremendous, tremendous opportunities on the supply chain. If you look at what agriculture means in this state, agriculture provides nearly $105 billion, B with a B as in billion, annually to our state's economy. Money is being created up and down that supply chain. Now, I will be the first to admit that we need to make sure that we can. There's more dollars that are available along that supply chain for the individuals that are, you know, milking the cows and you know, growing the corn and the soybeans. In the crops. But if you look at the food processing, the transportation, the logistics, the research, the financial, the insurance, all of that that's in there, it's an example of how we can do even more. And I want to be able to do more. And I think investing in manufacturing and agriculture is a winning strategy long term for this state. It's what helped build this state, and I believe it will continue to keep this state going forward.
So, talking about the Democratic primary on August 11th, Brad Paff, you're running against Jane Swigum and Paul Weber. I want to ask you, in your mind, what separates your candidacy from that of your opponents? Why should people take a closer look at you?
I think, first of all, I want to compliment anyone for running for public office. This is not easy. In the best of times, and definitely when we have a situation right now in which, you know, there's, you know, we're living in a global health pandemic and an economic slowdown, and there's some, you know, real uncertainty that's out here right now. This is not an easy time to run for public office. So I want to compliment anyone that runs for public office. What separates me is this: is I have the experience, I have the knowledge, I can bring people together in order to get things done. I have spent most of my adult professional life working on behalf of the people of Western Wisconsin. I understand this area. I understand the people. I understand the community. I understand, you know, our history. And I want to help us move us forward. I think this is an amazing place to live, to work, and to raise a family. And I think that, you know, our future is extremely bright. I want to make sure that, you know, we have someone in the Wisconsin State Legislature that is ready for the time, that understands the seriousness of the times, but also understands the resilience, the dedication, and the hard work of the people of Western Wisconsin here. and is going to hit the ground running on day one.
Looking ahead then to November, as Democrats choose on August 11th, who will represent them in that November election, what, as you look ahead to the Republican opponent in November, Dan Kopanky, what comes to mind as a reason why you think you can mount a successful campaign against Mr. Kopanky, whose political experience is pretty extensive as well?
I think I've demonstrated in my time in state government most recently, and also my time when I had the opportunity to work at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, that I will stand up and work for the people of this district and the people of this state. I am willing to stand up against the powers that be and work for the people. I will do more than just continually vote for my political party or individuals that want to carry favor. I will stand up and listen to what's happening out here in the countryside and the people. And when I served as the secretary designee of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, I traveled this state, I listened, and I heard what was going on, and I brought back to the leadership in the legislature and to others the serious times that are taking place right now in the countryside. And I put truth to power. It's not easy out here right now, and people didn't want to hear what I was saying, but I stood up and I fought for farmer mental health. I wanted to make sure that people in our state legislature understood what was really happening out here, and that wasn't easy. It was not easy to stand up against the political winds and speak about what was happening, but I did it, and I think people will recognize the fact. If they vote for Brad Paff, they're going to vote for someone that is going to put the people of this district first. Always. Always put the people of this district first. And the people of Wisconsin will always be put first. I am not going to be someone who is going to, be taking marching orders from anyone. I'm going to be taking the marching orders from the people of this district, from the people of the state of Wisconsin. I have a history that demonstrates that. I have people know that. They know that I'm very dedicated and I'm passionate and I care a great deal about making sure that, this area and this state continues to move forward. And I will be that kind of candidate. I am that kind of candidate. I will be that kind of that candidate in the general election. And I guarantee you I will be that kind of legislator in Madison.
Brad Paff is a Democrat running for his party's nomination in Wisconsin's 32nd State Senate District. The primary election is on August 11th. Mr. Paff, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And you're listening to Newsmakers on WPR in La Crosse. Thank you very much for tuning in. Remember, you can find more information about our program at our website, WPR.org. It's where you can listen to this show again or stream a previous show on demand. If you would like podcast reminders, all that kind of thing, open your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and subscribe. Remember, coming up next week, July 31st, we've got a debate between the Republicans running for the 3rd Congressional District seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. And on Thursday, August 6th, a debate between the Democratic candidates in that same race. That's the 3rd Congressional District. So that's coming up next week and next Friday and the week after that on Thursday, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'd certainly like to thank the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area for some help getting this program off the ground, making some initial contacts with our candidates this week. Thank them very much. And you can find more election information on that organization's election website, which is vote411.org. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studio. Thank you very much for listening. Today we're hearing from the candidates running for Wisconsin's 32nd State Senate District, the seat recently vacated by Democrat Jennifer Schilling. And we are joined in this segment by Jane Swigum, who's a candidate in the Democratic primary August 11th. Ms. Swigum, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I'm eager to hear what all of our candidates have to offer the voters, and so let's start by just talking about a little bit of your history. What people might need to know about you as a person, or in your career up to this point. What qualifies you or makes you interested in seeking this Senate seat?
Well, as a little bit of background, I was born at Vernon Memorial in Viroqua, Wisconsin, and was raised here in Gays Mills, Wisconsin, graduated from North Crawford High School, and went on to Viterbo, used to be college, now university, where I received a degree to teach secondary English to 7th to 12th graders. So I did that for 7 years. Then I decided to go back to school. I went back to school to become a nurse, and I have been a nurse now for over 20 years. And what makes me qualified for this position? Well, first of all, I believe that any elected position should be held by people who wish to represent the people in their communities. And that is clearly what the job is supposed to be. I don't feel it is appropriate to be pushing partisan agendas, and I feel that that is what we're getting here in the state of Wisconsin. There seems to be loggerheads happening at every turn, and it feels to me like nothing is getting done for the people in this state. So I decided to run, and I entered the race rather late. I believe it was May 10th when I was spurred to throw my name my hat into the ring for this. And I managed to get in 18 days, I got my 526 valid signatures to be on the ballot, and from there I have been out talking with people. So what makes me qualified for this? Well, first of all, I am a regular old person. I am not a professional politician. This is my first foray into politics, and I view this as a service that you do for your community. I don't feel that thinking that you're leading, I think what you're supposed to do is represent for the people. And the people in Wisconsin are down-to-earth people who have basic human needs, and I don't feel like they're being met. So I feel like I am uniquely qualified because I've been a nurse for 20 years, and I have been a tenacious advocate for patients, patients' families, coworkers. I have always been willing to stand up and say, when something is not right, and work to make it right for people. So I think that I have an excellent background to be doing this for the people of the 32nd District.
You talked about partisanship and the rancor that exists between parties and how everything seems to be attached to a partisan agenda at the moment. How are you, as just a lone person, and as you put it, just a regular person, going to go to Madison and change that? Maybe not. How are you personally going to change it? But how are you going to work to encourage a change in that?
Well, first of all, anytime I have been talking with people during this race, I have had it from both sides, where depending upon if you have a D or an R behind your name, you are given the cold shoulder, and that is exactly what is wrong with our political system. The people that we have elected are not working together to make something happen. Nothing makes me feel sadder about a state when you talk to someone, and as soon as you say that you are running on the Democratic ticket, they basically turn on their heel and will not speak to you. That is part of the problem. If you are a person who will not listen to another person because they are a Democrat or a Republican, you are part of the problem. And we need to make this about conversations, about making sure that everybody has what they need. You know, good health care, safe, affordable housing, clean air, clean water, clean environment, good roads. You know, it's the simple things that are going to make things better for everybody in the state, and that doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. We should be working towards those goals.
You just mentioned a few issues, housing, healthcare, environment, roads. I'm interested in knowing what are your top priorities if you should be elected to serve in the state Senate.
Well, I am a nurse, and I've been doing this for 20 years, so healthcare is my number one priority. Healthcare affects everyone. And I think what we seem to forget is that health insurance is not healthcare. Health insurance is a payer source. That's it. And somehow this has become the burden of business. Businesses are now expected to supply basically access to healthcare for their employees, and it is a huge expense. So we need to look at making sure that Medicare and Medicaid's reimbursement rates are brought up to the level of what it actually costs to provide health care. That has not been addressed in years. So we need to make sure that is happening. I do think that getting a single-payer health care system would be beautiful. No longer would you have to be dependent upon your employer for your health care. You could change jobs easily. If you lost a job, you would not lose your health care. We are seeing horrible things happening right now with the COVID crisis, with people who have lost their jobs, who have lost their health care. And frankly, the very first thing that we should be doing is accepting the monies from the federal government to expand Medicaid. That does not mean that the benefits get better. That means that more people can have access to it. We have plenty of people who are working people, two incomes in one family, and they cannot afford the health care that is provided through their employers. This has to stop. We have got to make sure that every single person has health care. And yes, I do feel that this needs to be something that the government is behind providing, not employers.
So you'd like to see a single-payer system, but in lieu of that, for the moment, you would favor Medicaid expansion?
Absolutely.
Do you think that can get done in Wisconsin? It's been years now that the Affordable Care Act's been in place and Wisconsin has not yet expanded Medicaid. What's different now than was different a couple years ago?
Well, first of all, I think people should be furious about this in the state of Wisconsin, because you know who is denying people this access to health care? People in our elected representatives who already have access to health care. That is absolute nonsense that the people who are preventing others from getting health care already have it, and it is through their government. That is nuts. People need to stand up and say it is time to turn these politicians over and put someone in office who is going to try to help us. Every single one of us knows someone who cannot afford their deductible for their insurance, so they avoid going to the doctor. We know people who need testing done, whose insurance companies deny them the test because it doesn't fit the criteria that they wrote. We know people who cannot afford their medications because the pharmaceutical companies have no cap on the amount of profit they can make on a drug. People need to start to get mad about stuff like this. They need to stand up and say, I expect you to do something about this as my elected representative, and get to work. Stop this constant bickering and refusal to help. You already have health care, then you need to make sure every single person in this state has health care.
You're obviously very passionate about health care, and you mentioned it's closely connected with your professional experience of the last 20 years. What other issues would you like to tackle in Madison?
Campaign finance reform. I would like to point out that I am the only candidate who is not accepting any money. The reason why I decided to go without taking any is because I was so completely turned off after being told that I would have to raise $300,000 to $500,000 to be a viable candidate. It is no wonder that people in this state do not participate and try to run for office themselves because they feel like they can't. The money is out of control, and the expectation that you will raise that amount of money is insane. So it prevents people from participating in elections as far as running for office. Then we need to look at basically term limits, because if we eliminate the amount of time that you can spend in office, we then eliminate the amount of time you spend stumping for more money to run for office. The idea that a person is elected to represent and yet their second job is trying to get as much money in their campaign reelection coffers is crazy. We need to realize that money is preventing us from having anything happening within our government for us. If we can say public financing of elections, perfect. If we can say term limits, and I love quoting Mark Twain because politicians and diapers need to be changed often and for the same reason. Turn people over. If you are not seeing the results that you want coming out of our legislature, then it is time to vote like your life depends upon it. And you need to vote for someone who will be a champion for you and not for the special interest groups stuffing money in their campaigns.
Issues like term limits and campaign finance reform are popular election year issues, but they very seldom gain any traction. Some speculate because the people that would have to vote on changing such things are the very people who benefit from the existence of those systems. Why would it be different with Jane Swigum as state senator?
Well, first of all, this is not my career. This is a service that I'm doing. I saw basically what I thought was very poor behavior on the part of someone who is the presumptive Republican nominee during a healthcare crisis. So that got me started. But if we're going to look at this, we need to start electing people who will say, I pledge to remain in office a maximum of 8 years. And don't you even try to argue with me, anybody out there, that that is when you just start to learn the job. If it took me 8 years to learn any job, I would have been fired in 6 months. We need to expect that our elected representatives can figure out what to do. This is not rocket science, people, and can actually make things happen. If they pledged term limits, then they should agree to being out in a certain number of years. Me, 8 years, I think, would be a lifetime. And I don't feel that it's going to take me 8 years to learn the job.
You mentioned housing earlier as an issue that you'd like to address, and that's an interesting and important issue because in some places in our district, it costs, you know, 25% to 50% more or maybe even more than that to rent an apartment or a house as it does to pay the mortgage on a similar sized property. And yet a lot of people who might like to become homeowners have difficulty getting their finances in order to do so and have trouble making it through the approval process. What can be done on the state level to encourage higher homeownership or to fix the low-income housing problem?
Well, let's look no further than Colorado. Colorado has done something novel, which we all are aware of. They legalized, regulated, and taxed marijuana. That is not something that I partake in personally, but I do think that by doing that, they have created a cash cow for themselves, which they have then been able to take all of those monies and decide where does this need to go. And they are actively working on creating low-income housing for people in their state. That is just one way that they're spending the money from that. So I do think that we need to start looking for a different tax base, and that's one way to do it. That money can then be put towards a ton of different issues. But I do think housing is one that everybody needs. Safe housing, they need safe, affordable housing, they need health care, and they need clean water and clean air. We also need employers being able to pay us a living wage. I have met a number of people who are not working one job but two. They have no health care services through their or health care provided through their employers. And they are not making a living wage. They are the working poor. And one bad illness or injury is going to sink them.
You talked about a living wage. Do I assume then that you would favor raising the minimum wage?
Absolutely. I don't think the minimum wage has moved since I worked as a lifeguard in the Gays Mill swimming pool when I was 18. It has been stagnant. And yet, everything else is more expensive. Housing is more expensive. Groceries are more expensive. Insurance is more expensive. And yet we expect that people can function on a wage that is not allowing them to even afford to have a decent place to live. So, yes, I support a $15 an hour minimum wage. And let's get started on this one. People are going to all say, there's no way we can do that. There is a way we can do that, because if we take that burden off employers for health care expenses, and many employers are paying upwards of $10,000 per employee to provide them with access to health care, that money can be turned around into different options, like raising the wage of their employees.
Now, I don't mean to put words in anybody's mouth, but I could imagine a future Republican opponent saying something like, yeah, you're going to end up paying them more, and then they're going to pay more taxes for all that health care you're going to give them.
That is true. Nothing is free, folks. Nothing is free. But your tax money should be going towards helping you to live a better life. It should not be getting dumped into the military-industrial complex. It should not be getting dumped into, basically, corporate corrections. People are making money off of the misfortune of others, and it is time that we start looking at what we need to do to make sure that the money you pay in taxes goes to actually doing something that will help you instead of being stuffed into some bigwig's pocket who has basically three or four prisons in the state of Wisconsin.
Let's talk about the economy for a little bit, because that's been on a lot of people's minds, especially in light of COVID-19. A lot of people have been laid off or had their hours reduced, and everybody's experiencing work in a different way than maybe they used to. I know the dairy industry in Wisconsin's been in trouble for a couple of years. We've seen other industries, manufacturing throughout the country. There's been real pressure placed on our manufacturing industries. What changes would you like to see to help people on the industrial side of our economy thrive here in Western Wisconsin?
Well, I think that anytime you are looking at trying to assist businesses, whether they're small or large, whether it's a small family farm, whether it is a factory such as one in the middle of Gaze Mills, you want to look at making sure that their employees are paid well, and that they have access to health care. Removing that health care from their burden as far as business owners goes is one way to do that. Farmers, the dairy money has fallen out of the regular dairy, not the organic. Organic seems to be doing quite fine. But I think that we need to help farmers look at different ways to manage farming. If people around here are familiar with the organic movement, that seems to be a real boon for people who are willing to do the work to get into organics. And there is a lovely farmer running for state assembly down here, Tucker, and I'm going to kill his last name, Greetbeck. He has some great ideas about things that can be done with family farms in order to help to make sure that they are able to continue to make money and that they are doing their farming in ways that really help save the environment. And I am a nurse. I am not a farmer. I am willing to listen to people, and I've been very impressed with what Tucker has had to say about that.
Your two opponents in this race, Paul Weber and Brad Paff, what differentiates you from them? Why should voters choose you over your August 11th primary opponents?
Well, one, I'm a woman. This seat was formerly held by Jennifer Schilling, and I was very disappointed when I heard that she was going to back Brad Paff for this office, because I feel like we need to keep women in elected office in Wisconsin. We only have 27% representation in the entire legislature, so I would like to see us have 50%, since we are about 50% of the population. So that is my you look at us, that is our big difference. I am a woman. The next difference that we have is that I am a nurse. I have been working in, you know, since I was 18 years old in a variety of helping positions. I was a teacher, then I was a nurse. And my background is that I have had to work for every last dime I have ever made. I have never been appointed to anything. I have not been a professional politician. I am simply a person who sees a need within this district for someone who will represent and be a champion for the people here, not a champion for corporate industry, for corporate politics. Yeah, there is a big difference between us, and there are several differences, but I am the one who is not taking any money. I am one who's willing to stand up for what I believe in and continue to take money, even though it has been a struggle with this campaign. I have a lot of integrity, and if you keep your money, I will keep my integrity, and I plan to remain this way for the rest of my life, not just for a campaign. So you have a choice to make, people. You need to decide which way are you going to go. Are you going to continue with politics as usual, with pushing partisan agendas, Or are you going to start to stand up and say, it's time for this nonsense to stop, and we need to put someone in office who is not going to be participating in that?
Looking ahead to November, the Republican candidate is running unopposed in the primary, so we already know it's going to be Dan Kopenke, who is long on political experience and is well-known in the community. How do you mount a campaign as, admittedly, you're a newcomer to the political scene? How do you mount a campaign against someone like that?
Well, let's point this out. I think this is his fifth time running for this office. He was elected twice, and he was removed from office after he went basically against the desires of the citizenry of the 32nd District when he voted for Act 10. He knew this was going to be a difficult, difficult vote, and yet, knowing exactly what his constituents wanted, he voted to go with the party line. And I think that is what you're going to get, folks. You are going to get someone who is going to toe that Republican Party line, and it has gotten us nowhere. Our government is at a standstill. The improvements in our lives are non-existent. So if you want to, vote for the cash cow of the Republican Party, then I guess that's the way you're going to have to go. But I don't think that that vote is going to win you anything. It is just going to make partisan politics and agendas a priority yet again.
We have just a little bit of time remaining. We've talked about quite a lot over the last 20 minutes or so, Ms. Swigum, and I want to give you the 30-second elevator pitch opportunity to remind voters one more time why you feel like they should pick you.
When you sit down and you think about the person that you want representing you, you want someone who will listen to you, who will respond to your inquiries and needs, and you want someone who is going to fight for you. You do not want someone who is going to have a pocket full of corporate money influencing their votes. You want someone who's going to work for you, not for somebody stuffing money in their pockets. Most of us can't afford to donate money towards people's campaigns. So you need to think about it. You need to think long and hard about what kind of person you want. Do you want someone who will stand up and who will speak for you, or do you want someone who is going to do what their party wants? Because I am not that person. I am a bulldog.
Jane Swigum is a Democratic candidate for United States Senate and will face Paul Weber and Brad Pfaff in the primary on August 11th. They are running to represent the Democratic Party in the 32nd State Senate District. Jane Swigum, thank you so much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
And you're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you very much for listening to our program today. We heard from Brad Pfaff, from Jane Swigum, both of them running in the 32nd State Senate District for the Democratic nomination. Paul Weber also running in that contest. He was not available for an interview this week, but he is nevertheless on the ballot. And the winner of that contest will face Republican Dan Kopenke in the November general election. And we'd certainly like to thank the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area for some help getting this program off the ground, making some initial contacts with our candidates this week. Thank them very much. And you can find more election information on that organization's election website, which is vote411.org. Coming up on our program next week, we will have a debate between the Republicans running for the nomination to potentially elected in the 3rd Congressional District. And the following week, not on Friday, but instead on Thursday, August 6th, we'll have a debate between the Democrats running for the 3rd Congressional nomination. That's all on Wisconsin Public Radio here on Newsmakers coming up in the coming weeks. For now, thank you very much for listening. For my producers, John Davis, Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Join us next time for another Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.